earlier and regularly who have been coming to encourage us. Thank you to them, and thank you to the new faces who have come to with a desire to understand what is this topic all going to unravel to us today. So I just wanted to share with you, just before I left for coming for this lecture, one of my friends, she's from a prominent medical institute in Bombay. She came, I was talking to her on the phone, and I asked her, we were talking for some time, and then I asked her, I said, are you coming for the Chetna program today? She said, yeah, sure, I'm coming. I said, you're bringing your friends? So she became silent for a minute, and she said, actually, no, my friends don't want to come. I said, why they don't want to come? She said, because they don't know what to expect over there. They were not very sure. So though she tried to tell them to come, but they were very apprehensive. So we don't know what to expect, so we better not come. So that reminded me of a joke that I had heard, that once a mother and a child, they were walking on the road and they saw a devotee. If you know what a devotee looks like, there are many devotees here, shaven-headed with a shikha and wearing saffron clothes. So the small baby boy, very inquisitive, and he was asking his mother, mommy, mommy, who is that? So mother looked, and she looked at the child and took the child in the other direction, saying, come, come, beta, that is a bhoot. So the child didn't know what to think. And what do you expect, that when he grows up, and sometime if he sees bhoots, what he thinks are bhoots, what he will think? If somebody invites him that please come to the temple for a program, he will say, no, that is a bhoot bangla. Because so many bhoots will be there like that. So it was so sad to hear this. Actually, we laugh at it, but very painful to hear that this is the impression that people have or they want to give of people who are actual well-wishers of society. Don't you think so? If this is the impression that kids have from the time they are so small, when they grow up, what they will think, that they don't know what to make out of it when the adults are giving this type of culture to their children. So if you go to think that what religion has been brought down to today, I was just remembering three examples, that what is religion in today's day and age? It has become like a prostitute wearing Mangalsutra. Can you imagine that? A prostitute wearing Mangalsutra. Or even a second example could be like having beer with tulsi inside. It's offered beer which we are having. And more amazing than that would be like having a Jain chicken soup. What do you feel about it? You feel it's like a joke, right? What are we trying to talk? But actually religion has been brought down to this, that people have become so skeptical. They don't know what to expect, and they don't want to come for these type of programs. So definitely we must congratulate all of you, because all of you are those special souls in the whole society who have taken that bold step to try to understand, even if it is against the current of the world. We want to understand this. So congratulations to all of you. But we should understand one thing, that forget religion first of all trying to teach us about God. We all think, oh, religion must be something about God or something. But forget being God. It first teaches us what? How to be good human beings. Isn't it? Today we ask that, which is the rarest species in the world? Some people might say cheetahs, whales, or some species of tigers, white tigers or something. But did you know that the most endangered species in this whole world are human beings with a solid set of good values in their life? Did you know that? It's true. They are the rarest species, and you are among those rare who are sitting over here. So don't take this as an ordinary event. We were discussing in another camp which we had, that when sincere souls get together like this to try to understand higher principles of life, it is actually a universal celebration. Because even the demigods must be taking note of it, oh, still in this horrible earth planet, there are still some good souls who want to improve their life, who want to know how to make better ideals in my life. So, as we say that we are here trying to develop some good values in our life before we try to talk about God. Because when we have those good principles in our life, what happens? Automatically we become closer to God, isn't it? When we have goodness in our life, then automatically we become lovers of God and we become closer to God. So as we say that empty gunny bags, they don't stand up. Do they stand? Take an empty gunny bag. You have to put some substance inside before it can stand up. So we want to try to become people with substance. There are many empty gunny bags all over the world. But let us become some gunny bags who can stand up. That at least some people can see that there is something present over here. And lot of people are there all around the world who are trying to give us this knowledge, this education, which according to them, they think will help us. But as somebody defined, that today education has become what? It has become simply information, 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 more information, but no transformation. There is absolutely no transformation. It's like if I come to know that if I eat a particular type of food products, then I will get cancer. If I smoke cigarettes, it's injurious to my health. If I have sugar, then it's not good for my diabetes. Or if I have illicit sex, then I might get AIDS. If I have this knowledge, if I have this education, but if I don't act on it, if I don't change my habits, or if I don't transform my lifestyle to in accordance with this information which I've got, then is it information at all? It is as good as no information. When I didn't know, I was doing the same thing. After knowing also, I'm doing the same thing. So unless there is a transformation, there is no use of any of these information. And there are thousands and millions of books available giving this sort of information in this world. But here we are trying to give information which will bring about transformation in our life. So this is very, very important information. So we request you that please try to be with us as we are going through this process of transformation, which we are simply going to attempt at. It's a very deep topic. We cannot do anything in a wholesome way. But if we try to think that actually each one of us, does anybody else take responsibility for our lives? It's ultimately we have to take responsibility of our own lives. True? We are trying to day by day increase our standard of living, standard of status. Whatever in life we are trying to do, we are simply trying to increase that. But we are not doing anything to increase our standard of thinking. Nobody is trying to increase that. And if we ask ourselves that what is that one word, what is the one word which is preventing us from increasing the standard of thinking? And we could conclude very well that that word is passion. Passion for life, passion for things, passion for people. Passion in different ways is simply binding us, preventing us from going up in our moral principles and set of values. So if we ask ourselves that, what is this passion? What is the result of this passion? Why do we have this passion in us so much? What does it do to us, even if we don't want to behave in a particular way? What is pushing us to behave in this way? If we try to understand these facts, then we come to a conclusion that actually passion today, it is eating into the very vitals of our human souls. It has actually got such a strong foothold in the fortress of our heart that even if we try, no matter how hard, we are not able to come out of this particular emotion. It's, as again I was just entering into the train to reach here, how even if we don't want, devotees are trying to struggle to keep away from this passion. But what do we see? I just entered into the train, I was entering in the train and my cell rang. It was a SMS. So I said, let me get into the train and then I'll see. I sat in the seat, I put on my cell and I read an SMS. If you want to make new boyfriends, please SMS such and such number and type flirt. I said, that's the last thing I want to do in this world. And such SMSs keep coming every now and then. I'm sure we don't have to elaborate or give any more examples. Everybody knows these things. So what is this? Even if you forget, at least for today I was trying to think that I should not be try to be passionate because I'm going to try to speak on this topic. But even if I want to, this world will not allow us not to. Every moment we are being bombarded, right, left, center, up, down, everywhere. Passion, passion, passion. That's all that is there around us. And how do we identify this passion? Suppose we want to think that, okay, am I in passion or no? How do I know that? Or how do I understand that somebody else is in passion? What are the characteristics of that? Some of the characteristics which you can narrow down to would be selfishness, which would be the most prominent. Egoism. Hunger for name, fame, adoration. We want to be something. As she said, kuch karke dikhana hai. We want to show something to the world that we are also something. Others are, they can be, but even I want to be something so that people should recognize me. And there is greed. Typical symptoms. So in short, if you want to say, okay, what is the main characteristic of passion? Is hankering. Hankering, hankering, hankering. I want this, I want this, I want this, and I want that. And I want that also. And when we don't get it, what is the result? Lamentation. We become so sad about it. So life is all about that. If you judge yourself and you go a little bit inside, it goes, one day you are hankering, next day you are lamenting. Maybe 1 week you are hankering, 1 week you are lamenting. Forget that. Maybe one morning you are hankering, evening you are lamenting. It's become so frequent. Why? Because our desires have become so frequent. The frequency of the hankering and lamentation is increasing moment to moment in our life. And that's why we say, oh, this person is very moody. Why do we become moody? Why can't we remain in good mood all the time? Because of this. Hankering, lamentation. Hankering, lamentation. When I get something, I'm happy. When I don't get, I'm sad. So when we are trying to say that passion, passion for what? Two things. Wealth and sex. These are the two main things, which includes everything else inside. Anything you want to put in under this list, it comes in this list. And the struggle is what? Either to achieve it, or when you get it, the fear to hold on to it. First we are trying to have it, have it, have it, have it. When we have it, then I shouldn't lose it, lose it, lose it. So I just want to hold on to it somehow or the other, that I must not go. But how long can I hold on? Only till cruel death comes and forcibly snatches it away from me. So if you think that what is the central figure in this word passion, it is what? I. The big I. When I'm thinking that I want to work hard and have wealth. Wealth for whom? My neighbor? I want wealth. I want a good, handsome, very rich, educated boyfriend. For whom? My friend? For my best friend? Definitely not for my best friend. Maybe for anybody else. But I want him for whom? For me. I want it high. I will donate some money. That may give me satisfaction. To school, to a hospital. So that my some relative's name is put up. Is it so? My name. The world should know. I have given. How much? 101 rupees. It should be put on a big plaque, which might be costing more than 101 rupees. But I have given 101 rupees. That must come on the plaque. So psychologists today, they say that today's generation is known as the I generation. It's I. I want this, I want this, I don't want this, and I want this, and I don't want this. And this is not what the devotees are saying. This is the big, big psychologists are saying that today is the I generation. And I symbolizes selfishness. Only those people who are selfish, they will think about themselves. We always want to be the hub of the universe. You know, universe is a very big thing, no? But we want to be the hub of it. You know what's a hub? If there's a big wheel, there are many spokes in the wheel. There's a center to the wheel. So we want to be that center always. Is it true? Take for example, if you go for your friend's wedding or somebody's wedding. Wedding is theirs. They are on stage. They are dressed up. Fine. Why do we dress up there? Because even if it is their wedding, we want to be the center of attraction. Isn't it? Maybe somebody will get attracted to me. Maybe choose me and tomorrow I'll be standing on the stage like that. So I want to be the center of it. That I, that doesn't get out of our life. And this is what the world is making out of us. Fools. We are laughing, but this is what is happening. The ads all over are bombarding. Do you see any ads for rice, dal, chapati? Because they are necessary things. You don't need to advertise. You are going to eat. Anyways. But usually advertisement is what? Advertisement is only for unnecessary things, which they have to make to explain to you the importance that it is necessary, please buy it. If you already knew it is necessary, they wouldn't have to advertise, like they don't have to do for rice, dal, chapati or anything. But unnecessary things like a small something, which is not necessary, but they will blow it up so much to make you feel that no, you need it, you need it, you need it. And when you see that ad in 10 places, the 11th place you start thinking that, yeah, maybe I need it. So if a small page of ad or one page can sell you a bottle of shampoo, don't you think that a movie or a whole book or a magazine can sell you an entire lifestyle? It definitely can change our whole lifestyle. So how careful we have to be by what to get influenced by and by what not to get influenced by. And as Prem Manjari Mataji very well put it, that today's world is expert at giving us what? Speed. It gives us great speed, fast life. Everything fast, fast food, fast life, fast train. Everything is fast, 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 you know. People, there are slow trains, but people want to catch fast train. They will hang out, they will fall out, but fast train, you know. I don't go in slow trains, I always go in fast train. They will sit on top of the train. Fast, everybody wants everything fast. So this world gives us speed. But what gives us direction? Only religion gives us direction. Because imagine, if you are in great speed, but you have no direction, then the result is sure accident. Full speed, no direction is equal to sure accident. Nothing else. So religion is trying to teach us this and give us this direction in our life that stop. Stop for a minute in your life. Just think. Take out time to think. Today we have no time to think. We are running, running, running. No time to even think. So it's good, you know, that we are able to gather all of you, make you sit down, not do anything else. If we just give you half an hour, just think. This lecture will reveal itself from within your heart also. We won't need to tell you because it's all there. It's all common sense. It's nothing new that we are trying to tell you. It will all reveal itself from within to you. But here we are trying to, religion, what it is trying to explain to us, that all of us over here, sitting here, are what? We are all parts and parcels of this God who is standing over here. Being part and parcel of Him, we were all pure when we were there up there. But when we came down here to this material world, what happened? We became contaminated. How? Just like the rainwater. We saw the rainwater. When the rainwater is in the cloud, high up in the cloud, it's very pure. You don't need Bisleri or anything. You can just go in the cloud and purest water, you know, drink it. It's pure. But when it starts coming down, what happens? It contacts. What does it contact? Gaseous substances, dirt, pollution, and then it gets very, very impure. So impure that sometimes it can kill. That much contamination can take place. Similarly, we were all pure souls with God, happy. There was no sadness, no misery, we were enjoying. But we wanted to try out. So we came down here. When we came down here, we became contaminated by what? These modes. The modes of goodness, the modes of passion, the modes of ignorance. The modes are called as ropes. They bind us. And they bind us so tight, it's very difficult to come out of it. So how do you remove this contamination? If I want to transform contaminated water back into pure water, what do I have to do? There has to be a process. A process of purification, filtration. Science students, how many science students here? All of us know very well, sometime if we are not now, we were, that the process of filtration, many other processes are there by which we can purify the water to its original state of pure consciousness, purity. And then we can easily drink it. So when we are talking about from passion to compassion, we are talking of transforming something. So if everything has a process, definitely the process, there has to be a process to transform purification, passion into compassion. Isn't it? Are you able to follow my logic? What I'm saying? There has to be a process. It cannot be a mechanical process that I have a machine and from one side I put in passion and out from the other side comes compassion. Very nice. Is it so easy? It doesn't happen like that. In fact, it is said that unless, listen to this carefully, it is said that unless compassion acts on passion, there cannot be real compassion. I'll repeat. First, compassion has to act on passion, and then only it can be transformed into real compassion which is there. Without this sort of compassion, what happens? We become degraded to life which could be even lower than animals. And it was such a stark example which I just went on the net 2 weeks back, and somebody had sent me a mail, beautiful mail. There was a picture of a nice tigress, and the next picture was of a very sulky tigress, and she was very like weak. And it was written over there that a tigress gave birth to 3 cubs in the cage, and she lost all 3 cubs after their birth, and she became very morose. She became so sad, she became sick, clinically sick and diseased. And just to bring her back to, at least give her a desire to live, what they had to do? They took the babies of small piglets, and they put tiger skin on the piglets, and they put the piglets around the tigress just to give her some hope, thinking that maybe she will mistake her for her own cubs. So I saw this, and then I got another mail, and I read that mail, and I was so shocked and pained to read that mail. And that mail was what? It was a letter from a baby to her mother. Which baby? Not any baby. A baby who was about to be aborted. And that baby writes a letter to her mother. Mataji will read out that letter to us.
The title is A Letter from an Unborn Baby. Hi Mom, how are you? I'm doing just fine, thanks. Only a few days have gone by since I was conceived, and I am now growing in your tummy. To tell you the truth, I can't explain how happy I am to know that you are my mom. It also makes me proud to know that I was conceived out of love. I'm sure I'm going to be the happiest baby alive. Mommy, a month has gone past and I have started to notice how my body is forming. I know I'm not much to look at now, but just wait and see. I shall make you so proud. Even though I'm feeling happy, I sense something is going wrong. You seem to be having strange thoughts that leave me restless and worried. But I'm sure everything is going to be back, to be okay. Don't despair. 2.5 months have gone by, Mom. I now have hands that I can use to play with. Oh, I'm so happy. Mommy, please tell me, what is wrong? Why are you crying so much lately? Why you and Dad argue every time you meet up with one another? Don't you guys want me anymore? I'm going to do everything I can to make you want me. 3 months have now passed, Mom, but you still seem to be so sad. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm so confused. Today, we went to see the doctor and he booked an appointment for you tomorrow. I don't understand why I'm feeling so good and you aren't, Mom. Mommy, where are we going? What's happening? Mommy, this is not normally the time you take to your afternoon nap. Don't lie down. Besides, I'm not tired. I still want to play. Ah, what is this thing doing inside of my house? Is it a new toy? Hey, it's sucking up my house. Please, don't tug at me. No, don't hit me. You're hurting me. Can't you see? I'm still small. I can't defend myself. Mummy, stop them. That's my hand. Mummy, my leg. They're ripping it out. Defend me, Mom. Help me, Mom. Tell them to stop. I promise I shall stop kicking them if they do. How is it possible that a human being can be doing this to me? Oh, Mummy, I can't go on anymore. Help. Help me, Mom. 17 years have gone by since you made that fateful decision. How you still suffer over the very thought of it. Please don't cry. Remember that I love you and I shall be waiting for you with open arms. Love you lots, your baby.
Could you all hear it? Till the end? Just imagine the plight of this baby. The baby is crying to the mother for help. Then, Mommy, please help me. They are trying to harm me. But he doesn't know that it's the mother herself who is trying to harm the baby. So what is... This is the condition that passion has done to us today. That a woman simply nonchalantly, she just walks into abortion center. And more often than not, the abortion center is called Mamta Abortion Center. Or it is called Matushri Abortion Center. Which Mamta? Which Matushri are we trying to talk about? Those mothers who are supposed to be Kripa Murtis, personifications of love and compassion in this world. The first people the babies come in contact with in the world is the mother. And when they have this sort of experience, what do you think? Where is this compassion gone? It is simply gone to the dustbin. This passion has done such harm to our society that even civilized people, they have made them so hard-hearted. This topic comes to this thing, I feel that when the mothers, they do like this, and then they just go to office after 1 or 2 hours as if nothing has ever happened. And all this only for what? 70 rupees. Only 70 rupees I pay and I can get rid of some tissue, as they call it. They don't even think it is a baby. Forget their own baby. And here look at an animal. We are talking about the tiger. The tigress was so much pained at having lost the baby. So, can't we safely say that sometimes the animals have more compassion than a human being? So where is the society heading for? We say we are advanced. We are progressing. People may say that, why Indians, we don't want to remain backwards. We also have to progress. We have to go ahead. And if we don't have passion, then how can we progress? Is this the passion we are talking about? Is this advancement? Or is it going down in the society? We are simply worse than animals. Sorry we have to say that, but it is a reality that this is what has happened to us. So if we see that passion makes the heart hard, it degrades us, it corrupts us. And on the other side, compassion, what does it do? It makes the heart very soft. You feel very pained when you see other people pained. It softens the heart, it elevates the soul. It uplifts your soul. So this is the difference between passion and compassion. So how do we know that which category do we fit into? If we stop for a minute and ask ourselves this question, that am I para dukhe dukhi? When I see people suffering around me, do I feel pain? When I see a poor beggar, when I see a diseased person, when I see anybody crying, suffering, does it cause my heart to pain for a minute? Even for a minute, not for a longer time. Does it cause? Am I becoming para dukhe dukhi? Or is it that I am becoming what? Para sukhe dukhi. When I see other people sukhi, am I becoming dukhi because of that? Okay, why he? Why she and why not me? Why she has this? Why not me? Why I don't have this? Why she came first? Why not me? Or even worse than that, are we para dukhe sukhi? Do we feel great happiness seeing other people suffer? That would be worse than even the second level of it. So, if we try to see we can ourselves analyze that at what level we could be, and we would want to break free of this bondage of passion that is binding us so deeply and so strongly in this world. And as we said that being parts and parcels of God ourselves, we are all meant to have godly qualities because we are part of God. All the qualities that God has, we are meant to have. And since God is all compassionate, we are also supposed to have that quality of compassion in us. And how compassionate is God? He keeps coming lifetime after lifetime to save us from this suffering where we are there. How does He come? Does He personally come? Holding our finger? Yeah, in one sense, He comes as a Paramatma. He comes as a super soul in our heart to try to guide us in life. Do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. And that guidance of the super soul is known as conscience. We talk of guilt and conscience. What is that? We were discussing that this is simply an SMS from the Lord. The guilt that we feel when we do something wrong, the conscience that bites us, is like a SMS from the Lord. He's hinting us that, stop, this is not good. And sometimes our conscience feels good. When we help somebody, we feel nice about it. So that is again an SMS from the Lord. Thank you, my child. You know, good, you have done this. I am happy. So, the Paramatma comes lifetime after lifetime in every species. Whether we become a cockroach, a rat, or a cat, or whatever we become, the Paramatma is accompanying us all through as our best friend over there. And if He doesn't come, what does He do? He sends His representatives to us. Those representatives act on behalf of the Lord as the instruments of compassion in our life. And when we think of this naturally, we think of great souls like Jesus, Mother Teresa, right? So many of these souls will come into our mind. And as we saw the drama, we saw the great soul, Narad Muni. He saved this hunter from going on the royal road to hell. He was on his way to hell. And he was taking great pleasure in killing animals. And what type of killing? If you kill somebody fully, it is good, you know. No more suffering. But he would half kill. You know, half kill means he would take pleasure in seeing the suffering. So he was para dukhe sukhi. Third category, the worst category which we are talking about. He was taking great pleasure. Until that great soul, Narad Muni, came in his life. And what he did? He transformed his passion to see the suffering of others into compassion, so much so that later on he could not even see and he could not even harm an ant. How big is an ant? Insignificant. Many times we don't even know we are killing hundreds of ants on the road. Unconsciously we are doing it. But this person who used to be a sadist in killing so many animals, he became so compassionately transformed that he could not even bear to see an ant being harmed. That was the level of transformation that took place in his heart. And when we are talking about souls like Jesus and Mother Teresa, they became so famous. They become famous, right? Because of the help that they are giving to suffering living entities. All of you remember that great date, 9/11. What was 9/11? The day the WTC crashed down, right? And when that happened, what happened? The people who jumped in fearlessly were the firemen. The firemen only. What is the technical word for that? The firemen who, they came in the brigade and they jumped into the fire to save all these people who were getting killed over there. And later on, they became the heroes of society. So much so that the Valentine's Day which followed that incident that happened in September and in Feb when the Valentine's Day came, what they do is the day when they dress up as different characters whom they consider as heroes in their life, Halloween's Day. Yeah, I think Halloween's Day. So they dress up as different people. Everyone dresses up as the hero whom they feel, like Spider-Man or whoever you might consider as your hero, you'll dress up as that. And you won't believe that on that particular day, which every year they would dress up as many other things, most of the people dressed up as firemen, fire brigade people. Why? Because they became the heroes they relieved the suffering of those people who were dying at that time. So how automatically when people show compassion to other living entities, you become famous. But somebody may argue that even Hitler and Napoleon were very famous. They were famous for their passion. So they were also famous. So what's so great? Either I become famous this way or that way. But we'll ask you a question that if somebody tells you that, somebody meets you and he says that I am very famous in the Tihar jail. Everybody knows me there. In the Arthur Road jail, you know. Every single person knows me there. Right from the guard to the policeman to the fellow prisoners and everybody. So is that glorious or inglorious? Would you like to be famous in such a place? You are so famous for your criminal activities, for your notoriousness, that everybody knows you there. That is not glory. So people like Hitler and Napoleon might be famous, but what are they famous for? That is important. While people like Jesus, Mother Teresa, so many examples are there, if you think about it. They were famous for their compassion. And immediately, when you hear about them, you see a movie on them, you read about them, what happens? A small desire, even in spite of the fact we are bound in the passion, erupts in our heart, a small flame of desire to try to become like them. Isn't it? Either become like them or to assist them in some small way possible. I also want to do some good to others. That desire simply comes in our heart. And that is why we say that real greatness is not in power and possession. Real greatness is in humility and compassion. That is what makes us really great people in this world, not the other thing. And if we try to analyze that there is always a law of demand and supply for anything. Why there is so many shops coming up? We say, so many hospitals are coming up. Why? Because there is a demand. There are so many diseases are coming up. Why there are so many shops, restaurants coming up? Because there is a demand. People have uncontrolled tongue. They want to, although there are already good restaurants, they still want better restaurants, other restaurants, some change of restaurant. Because there is demand, there is supply is there. But if you see, there is so much demand for compassion. So much suffering is there. It's always increasing, in fact, all the time. But where is the supply? Are there more people supplying compassion? Why? Because we are all just so busy. Busy what? We are so busy with ourselves, we have no time to think. We have no time to feel for others. Even if there are people suffering around us, we have no time to look and recognize their suffering also. We are just too busy. We have no time. We have no time for others. We are simply thinking of ourselves. But one might say, okay, anyways, there is so much suffering everywhere. What can a small I sit and do for the whole world? So what's the use, you know? Instead of doing some small thing, it's not going to make any much difference. So what can I do? So there was once a man who was walking, who went for an evening walk on the beach. And as he was walking around down the beach, he saw there was another old man walking in front of him. And every now and then he was bending down. He would bend down, pick up something, throw it into the ocean. Walk a few steps, bend down, pick up something, throw it into the ocean. So this man, young fellow, was getting very curious to know, what is he doing? So he ran up to him and he said, my dear sir, what are you doing? He's saying, don't you see? The ocean, because of its tide, has washed so many starfish on the shore. And if they are out of water for a long time, they will die. So I am trying to pick up the starfishes and put them back into the ocean so they can live. So this young fellow started laughing that, come on, you know. There are so many starfishes strewn all over the beach. Not only this beach, all over the world's beaches, they are being strewn over. How many starfishes are you going to make a difference to? How many can you pick up and throw? So while he is saying this, this old man walked a step further, picked up yet another fish, starfish, threw it into the water and said, it surely made a difference to this one. At least this one I could make a difference to. So if each one of us could decide that even one person I can show some compassion to, then it is still not less. And there is a higher pleasure which we get in helping someone than feeling pleasure ourselves. Have you seen? When you can, even if you can make an old man cross a road or just give some food to a beggar child who's crying, there is some sort of sense of satisfaction, some small happiness that we feel within our heart. Definitely we feel that. So when we see that somebody is giving clothes to the naked people, somebody is feeding somebody who is hungry, somebody is giving a job to somebody who is jobless, or somebody is curing the disease of some very sick person, we will say definitely this person is a very compassionate soul, isn't it? That's what it is. He is relieving the suffering of this particular soul. But if you go a little deeper inside and think that today I am giving food to this one person, but tomorrow again he will be hungry. I may give some clothes to somebody, but tomorrow those clothes will tear. I may cure a diseased person, but surely death will kill him tomorrow. I may give a job to somebody, but something may happen tomorrow. So when we are talking of compassion, we are trying to see that the service is most where the need is most. So if we want the better compassion would be to give a longer lasting relief to somebody, not temporary relief. And when we help somebody on the bodily platform, we are feeding somebody, we are clothing somebody, we are curing the disease of somebody. That is definitely compassion, and it must be done to begin with. But what we are doing, we are giving temporary relief to that person. But what about permanent relief? Is there something which we can do that by which this person never has to become poor again? Is there something which we can do that this person never has to become diseased again? Is there something we can do that this person never has to become old and die again? Is there something we can do that this person never suffers hunger pangs, no poverty, no joblessness, any of these things? Is there something we can do? We might think that, I don't know. But surely there is. If we can remove them from the cycle of birth and death, because they are here, they are suffering. If they are not here, they will not suffer. So if I can remove them from the cycle of birth and death itself, then once and for all, by this compassion, by this act of compassion, once and for all, I am relieving this person's suffering forever, eternally. He never has to go through all these sufferings ever again. Right? And if there are such compassionate souls, then they should be recognized as the most prominent people in society. They should be considered the heroes, not those people who can dance in front of you in a very titillating way, not those people who can put layers of makeup on their face and attract and arouse our passion. If the WTC was crushing down and a group of actors and actresses would come in front of them and do the most exciting dance with the best musical orchestra, would that be appreciated at that time? What long-lasting benefit is that going to have? What help is it going to do to them? No help. Just by saying, no, we are giving them entertainment just before they die. Let them have some good time. But it's not going to be of any value. So we should understand that which type of people we should recognize in this society and whom we should consider as real heroes in this world. And they should be recognized and talked about, and their message should be spread everywhere so that we can also learn how to become like them. And these souls' greatest compassion is what? That actually we, do you know how we take birth in this world? We take birth in this world because of our karma. You do some good karma, you get a good birth. You do bad karma, you get bad birth. But do you know how these great souls, they take birth? They come to this world only out of compassion. They were also enjoying with the Lord. We were enjoying, but we wanted to come down and be separate from God. But they never want to be separate from God. But God told them that on my behalf, you go down, you help these suffering souls, and in fact, you stop their suffering once and for all and bring them back to me, so that they will never have to suffer. So they left that enjoyment with the God which they were experiencing there, and out of their saintly compassion of their heart, they came down here to save us. Because compassion is their very nature. The nature of their compassion is such that it cannot be stopped by anything. Just like if the Ganga, it is flowing. The flow of the Ganga is so much at the Himalayas, nothing can obstruct it. Even if you put a big boulder, you put a dam, it will break the dam and it will flow down. It cannot stop its flow. Similarly, you cannot stop the flow of compassion from the heart of a genuine soul who is a lover of God. He will feel compassion so much so that he will go to any extent to help us out. There was once a sadhu, and he was sitting on the bank of the river and he was meditating, and suddenly he saw a scorpion drowning in the ocean, in the water. So he picked up the scorpion to take it out, and what the scorpion did, it bit it. So it got released from his hand, and again it started drowning. Again the sadhu picked it up. Again the scorpion bit it, or again chhoot gaya haath se. Again he lifted it, again it did. This happened several times. So there was a disciple of this sadhu sitting next to me and said, Guruji, you know, what are you doing? Why are you again and again doing this? The scorpion is biting you, just forget about it, no? So what did the sadhu look at him? He looked at the disciple with compassion in his eyes and he said, the nature of the scorpion is to bite. So it is acting according to its nature. And the nature of a sadhu is to save. So I am acting according to my nature. I will not give up my nature just because the scorpion is biting me. Similarly, no persecution could stop Jesus Christ from trying to save the living entities. We all know the story of Jesus. What all he went through. He could have just not said anything and they told him, you do what you want to do in your house, but don't preach. If you preach, we will persecute you. But he said, no, I cannot. That flow of compassion to save these suffering entities is so much, I cannot stop it. So no persecution could stop Jesus from doing that. Drinking poison, which came out of the Amrut Manthan, there was no problem for Lord Shiva to drink it. Out of compassion for all the living entities, he drank all that poison so that then nectar would come out and everybody else would get nectar. So even drinking poison could not stop Shiva's flow of compassion. There was another great saint in our Vaishnava parampara whose name was Vasudev Dutt. Vasudev Dutt was a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is an incarnation of God in this age of Kaliyuga. And imagine the compassion of this soul. One day he goes up to the Lord and he tells him what? That, my dear Lord, I have a prayer and a request to make to you. So the Lord said, what is that request? He said, I only request that let the sinful activities, please hear this carefully. He said, let the sinful activities of all the living entities in the whole universe. They are not talking of my country, not of my world, I am talking of the whole universe. And not of the human beings, of all the living entities. If you ask how many girls are there in this room right now, maybe 175, 200 girls are there. But how many living entities are here? Can't count. Millions of living entities are in this room alone. So how many living entities are there in the whole universe? You can't calculate. No mathematician can calculate. So what he requested the Lord, that my dear Lord, please grant me this boon that let me be able to take all the sinful activities and reactions of all the living entities all over the universe on me, so that they can be relieved of their sinful reactions and they can all go back to you. They can all go back to God and enjoy with you. Because what is stopping us from going to God is our sinful reactions. So let me take all that, and that means let me suffer in hell for eternity and let them enjoy over there. How many of us can even dare to even hear this prayer? Forget even think about it or make this prayer. It is humanly impossible for us to even conceive that somebody can pray like this. But this great saint, he actually prayed that, let me suffer so that others can enjoy. Usually we are asking, if we get a disease, if I get cancer, what do I think? Why me? Why I had to get here? Somebody else could have got it. If I am suffering from something, some financial loss, I think, why me? It could have happened to anybody else. But this great soul is thinking otherwise, that why not me? Let me suffer, let them enjoy. So this was the compassion. And also, when we talk of compassionate souls, we definitely cannot miss out, because there are so many contemporaries in us, and today we are able to sit over here and talk about compassion only because of the mercy and the compassion of great souls like Srila Prabhupada. I don't know how many of us over here know about Prabhupada. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he is the founder Acharya of our ISKCON movement. And he was born in Calcutta in 1896. And he met his spiritual master in 1922, he met him. And at that time, his guru gave him an instruction. He was also a worldly man like all of us, apparently. He had a business, he was a pharmacist, and he had a family, he had children, he had a wife. And he was doing a good business, and quite prominent, his drugs were going everywhere. But he met his spiritual master, and his spiritual master gave him a message that, you are an intelligent young man. why don't you take this message of God and spread it throughout the world and relieve the suffering of the living entities everywhere, especially in the English speaking language? Why don't you do that for us, for the movement? So this instruction which his guru gave, Bhaktivedanta Swami took it as his life and soul, and he started his life's mission from that point onwards. In 1944, single-handedly, he started printing a magazine which was called Back to Godhead, which was ushering everybody that come back to God. Lot of articles he wrote, and single-handedly he himself, although by then, by 1944, he had become penniless. He had no money. He was getting older. But what he was doing? Single-handedly he was writing articles. Not only writing it, he was editing them, proofreading them. He was going to the printer, buying the paper, getting it printed. And not only that, he was even distributing it door to door. In the heat, in the rain, sometimes he got heat strokes, sun strokes. He fainted in the middle of the road. But he did all that. He was going door to door and doing that. And all the while, he was trying to pursue the mission that my guru has told me that I should spread this thing to the suffering living entities. And definitely, the Western countries, under the illusion of enjoyment, they are suffering more than anybody else. So he wanted to go to the West to spread this message there. So he was begging many people to give him some money so that he could fulfill his guru's mission to go abroad and try to spread this message over there. And somehow or the other, he managed to change the heart of Sumati Morarji Desai, who was at that time the owner of the Scindia Steamship Company. And he begged her that, please give me a free passage on board the ship. And we know that ship takes how many days to reach from India to US? It took him almost somewhere around a month to reach there in the ship. And mind you, it was not a passenger ship. It was a cargo ship. There was only cargo on it. Maybe few, I think he was the only passenger, or maybe 2-3 others were there. Nobody on board. And this was at the ripe, advanced age of 70 years old. 70-year-old grandparents of ours, what do they think of doing? Enough I have done in my life. Now I want to retire. And he was leading a life in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, sadhus can live very happily. They don't need to, they get roti by begging here and there. Everybody feeds them. They are chanting the names of God. Very less passion in the atmosphere. Lot of God consciousness. So he was leading a life like that. But because he was feeling compassion for the suffering souls, he said that, so what if I'm 70? I will start my life now. So at the age of 70, he went on board the ship, which was called Jaladut, and he crossed the ocean, crossed the Atlantic, which is supposed to be the roughest sea, and on board the ship, he endured two massive heart attacks. A heart attack at that age, one itself is enough to kill you, but he endured two heart attacks, and still, his desire was as strong as ever that, no, I have to go. I have to stop the suffering of the living entities. I must go. No problem if I have this. So he came to the new country with no help. If we go abroad, we will make sure somebody is there to receive us there. We have enough money, we have paychecks. Everything we will ensure and then go there. Prabhupada said that when he got off the dock and he walked outside, he didn't know whether to turn left or to turn right. He didn't know anything, where I should go. And nobody was there on the opposite side to receive him over there. In this way, he entered the kingdom of passion, which was New York City. Boston, New York City, all these are kingdoms of passion, the capitals of passion, where nothing else but passion goes on. And what we are trying to do in India, Bombay, is simply a meek imitation of what they are doing over there. So he entered into there at that ripe old age. And what he did, he challenged the entire civilization of the West. And what did he tell? He wanted to break through the people's bondage of passion. And mind you, at that time when he reached there in 1965, the hippie movement was going on. If you all know what the hippie movement was all about, these hippies were not poor people. They were the sons and daughters of the richest millionaires and billionaires of the West at the time. And they had what they wanted at their demand. They could demand wealth, they had the wealth. They could demand sex, they had sex. What they wanted, they had. But what did they do? This fire of passion could not satisfy them. And what happened? They became so frustrated because they were hankering, they didn't get it, they were lamenting. It led to such high levels of frustration that they took to drugs and they took to all sorts of illicit activities. And that was the whole civilization, the hippie movement, as they call. It was a very growing movement at that time when Prabhupada entered over there. And what did Prabhupada do? Simply by the passion of one soul, he went and transformed the passion of hundreds and thousands of misdirected souls of the West and made them into compassionate souls such that they in turn turned and changed the lives of so many other souls. Prabhupada later on, after the movement was already established, he said that I shed hundreds of tons or gallons of blood to make one person a devotee of God. All that I did. And after that, he stayed over there. And what did he do for 11 years? He went around the whole world. 14 times he toured the whole globe. And in this age, by then that means he was progressing in his age. He was getting in almost end of 70s he was. And he globed the whole world 14 times. And not only that, his greatest contribution to the world today is his academic books which he gave us. You see the shelf over there? That is only a small display of the books. He wrote almost more than 70 volumes of religious texts which were based on our scriptures like Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. He gave authoritative translations, commentaries to all these religious classics of India which were there. And how did he do that? His whole day used to be busy in trying to preach this message of God. So he had no time to write. So at that age of 78, 79, he would sleep at 10 o'clock in the night and again rise at 12:31 in the night. And throughout the night, he wrote these books. For whom? For the materialistic society, misdirected society of which we all are part of, going in the wrong direction just to save all of us. He didn't sleep any of the nights. In fact, when he would travel from country to country, we all experience jet lags. It takes us 2-3 days, sometimes weeks, to overcome these jet lags. But Prabhupada would just, the moment he reached there, he would sleep at 10, get up at 1 o'clock and start translating and writing these books. Because he knew that I have very less time left. I may die any minute. I am an old man. So he would stay up full nights and write all these books. And some of these books today are textbooks in prominent universities all over the world. And for what he did all this? Why did he do all this? It was simply the spirit of his compassion. Nothing else could have propelled a person of this age to do this. Why would you want to do? And that too, there was no support from anybody, that for so many people are there to help us. For a small program like this we want to have, we require so much help. Please come. Somebody has to arrange the mic and somebody has to play the kartal and rhythm and kirtan has to take place and all. For a small program we require so much help. He established a worldwide movement struggling alone. What made him do this? It was only the selfless, saintly compassion which was aroused within his heart for the hopeless situation that people of this dark age of Kali Yuga were suffering for. And because of that, that was the only reason he could stretch himself so much. He went through high degrees of inconveniences, personal risks, heart attack, disease, old age, no support, all these things he went through. Simply by the power of this compassion. And this is what Prabhupada will be remembered for in this, for the rest of history. He will go down in history for this contribution of his, which he has done, to give the light of genuine spiritualism to all of us. And that is why it is so easy for us today. We never went through all these struggles. It is very easy for us to just sit on the dais and talk, we should be compassionate and we should do this and do that. But it is because of them that we are able to do this today. So just wanted to share these thoughts with all of you, that ultimately it was because of this compassion that Prabhupada today, he built a house in which the whole world could live in. The entire world, passionate people in the mode of ignorance, passion, whatever, we could all live into this house. And we just had a girls' camp a month ago in which many of our girls, committed girls like some of you sitting over here, 96 of us, we had gone for a camp and we wanted to realize that what is the contribution of great souls like Prabhupada in our life. And we had given them a project to do, that how has this great soul touched your life and how has it transformed you? How has it transformed your passion into compassion? And they all have done a beautiful project which we have displayed in the next room. It has been put up as an exhibition over there. So we only request you that at least we can begin somewhere, that we may not be compassionate ourselves, but we can at least decide that let me receive the compassion which these great souls want to give. That is the least we can do. At least let me be open-hearted to be able to receive this within my heart. So we will end the lecture here. We will have questions if anybody has. But after the kirtan, we request you that before you go down from here, please have a small look around the walls of the next room. If you all can please open the doors on that side. And participate in the kirtan first. The exhibition will remain for a long time. Don't go to see that and not be in the kirtan. Because as we said, that when we want to transform the contaminated rainwater into pure rainwater, there is a process of purification. So the process of purification that has been recommended for this age is what? Is chanting of the holy names of the Lord, because it cleanses the dirt off our heart. So we will try to do that process for about 15-20 minutes right now. We will not get time to do that at home. We may think I'll do it later. But let us begin now and here and now. So we request you to participate in this process of purification for some time. And just before you go down after the kirtan, have a look at the posters over there. And we have also put up the posters of the letter of the baby to the mother. That is on this side wall. Please read that. It is with pictures also. And at least that is the least women can do. Today I was reading statistics in the newspaper that teenage pregnancy and teenage abortions is so much on the increase that we cannot believe it. So actually this whole presentation was made by people who are on a anti-abortion campaign. So we can realize that the least compassion at least we can have is, let us also not participate in this sort of activities. Not only we don't participate in this cruelty, but we can even help even one soul to become aware that what sort of cruelty we would be doing to the society, then God would be pleased with us. So both the exhibits are there on the next room. Thank you very much for a patient listening. Hare Krishna.